This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Gil Alexander of A Numbers Game will join us. We will go over the day that was in the NFL, all of the college football. What a disaster that was this weekend. I'll get to that. Maybe talk some baseball. I don't know if I have time for some baseball here, but because we do have some moves trickling in. But we will start with the NFL and what was kind of a ho-hum Sunday in a lot of ways. I feel like I've said that a bunch of times. You know, this season, we really haven't gotten the great slates, the great endings. Washington, Philly was a good ending. Minnesota, Seattle was a good ending. And that's the big story of Sunday, is the race for the one seed as Minnesota takes one step closer. They are now two wins away. Now it's two tough wins away. They need to beat Green Bay. They are a two-point favorite on the look-ahead line. And they will need to win at Detroit to win, to clinch the one seed and be the NFC North champ. But Philly falls behind both Detroit and Minnesota. Detroit with a nice bounce back effort. Maybe we were a little quick to bury them because they, you know, gave up basically, you know, 100 points in the last two games, all sorts of injuries. Well, they went on the road and they jumped on Chicago, got the lead early, won handily. And these coaches, man, these coaches have had been at some just horrible decisions all weekend. NFL, pro, college. The Bears down 20, middle of the third quarter, kicked a field goal, then punted later down 17. I know it was fourth and like a mile, but man, you got to at least try. These coaches don't even try sometimes. But Detroit bounces back. Minnesota, it felt like they were going to give that game away. Dropped interceptions. They gave up a late score to Geno Smith and Seattle. And the key play in the game, they're about to, and not about to, they got sacked on second and 10. It's about to be third and a mile. And the game was, you know, 3-4 minutes left in the game. It's about to be over. Face mask on Darnold. Play or two later, touchdown to Jefferson, and all of a sudden, the Minnesota has the lead. They had to hang on. They had to survive two more Seattle possessions, but they got play. They made plays when they had to, and wasn't pretty at times, but Minnesota with a gutty win on the road in Seattle, and that line pushes. Depends on when you bet it. Mostly it closed three. There were some 2.5s. There were some 3.5s early in the week, but lands right on three, but a gutty win for Minnesota, and as they are now a step closer, and I think – we're probably going to be in a situation where week 18, it's Minnesota versus Detroit, not only for the one, or not only for the division, but for the one seed. And it is an all important one seed. It's such a difference between, you know, not being the one. If you're Minnesota, I mean, you could be looking at a situation where you're 14-3 and you're a five seed, and you're not only, you don't even get a home game in round one. You have to play round one. You have to play on the road pretty much all three rounds, barring something, you know, miraculous in terms of upsets. So that means everything in terms of, you know, coming out of the division. Not that you a lock to win the conference if you are the one seed, and not that you can't win on the road. We've seen, we've seen things like that happen before. You know, Pittsburgh, one of those years, won all their games on the road. The Giants have done it. We've seen teams do it, but all important one seed, Minnesota with a leg up on Philly and now Detroit. And I think we're looking at a Minnesota-Detroit showdown. Horrible loss for Philly. Hurts gets hurt. It's a concussion. We'll see if he's able to play this week. Coming up against Dallas, then they finish against the Giants. So we'll keep an eye on that. But they had every opportunity to ice this game, including a 3rd and 5, just north of the 2-minute warning. They hit Devontae Smith for a catch that would have iced the game after all of the turnovers Washington, all the back and forth. Philly's going to win, except he drops the ball. The game would have been all but over. Takes his eye off it. That's become an epidemic where these guys just take their eye off the ball quickly. And have to settle for a field goal, 5-point lead. And then Washington comes down the field, scores a late touchdown with just a few seconds left to win it for Washington. Good win for Washington. Philly still hasn't clinched the division, but they will win the division. And man, just a tough loss for Philly here. Not out of the woods, and not completely out of it for one seed, because hey, like I said, Minnesota has Green Bay and Detroit. That's a tough schedule. Detroit has at San Francisco, then Minnesota. So they could each, in theory, lose a game. And, you know, we know one of them is going to lose a game to the other one, you know, barring a tie. And maybe somebody loses another one in the next couple of weeks. And then Philly can backdoor their way, because front door their way into a one seed. So that's still not impossible. So that's an important race. As far as this weekend, Baltimore beats up on Philly. I had a good read on that game. Seems like Baltimore beat up on Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh seems like they're running out of steam. Baltimore now -140 to win the division. They are tied in terms of record. Pittsburgh does control the tiebreaker, but That tiebreaker is tenuous because if you lose to Cincy, you lose the division tiebreaker. If you lose this week to the Chiefs, Baltimore, I think, will beat the Texans. That's not an easy game, but Baltimore, I think, is the rightful slight favorite. It's unusual to be, you know, an invisible half game back with two to play and you're the favorite, especially when you're, you know, you're on the road this week for a game that's not that easy. Texans haven't played great, so I do think Baltimore wins. I do think Baltimore wins the division. So we will keep an eye on all of that. We will not be on Wednesday because it is Christmas. So those those teams kind of switch opponents, where on Wednesday the Saturday teams play again. It will be Chiefs at the Steelers, Chiefs laying 2.5, and then Ravens laying 3 at the Texans. And I'm concerned about saying, hey, it's too easy to take the favorites, but hey, easy's been the way to go in the NFL. If you look at college NFL this weekend, starting with Thursday with the Chargers beating the Broncos, Friday, Notre Dame beats Indiana, all of the favorites winning cover in college, NFL, all of the favorites winning cover on Saturday. Just a lot of chalk all the way around. I'm sure some of these sports books with these big money line parlays and these rollovers are, not thrilled about this idea that all of these favorites are doing so well. And you wonder if that, and not if it will, you know, adjust at some point, but hey, it doesn't mean it has to adjust this week. And there is no such thing, you know, as due in terms of like, hey, the dogs are due to win. That's a dangerous, dangerous way to think. So I mentioned the college. I was so excited for these college games all weekend. Friday, just kept looking at the clock, looking at the time, 2 hours till the game, 1 hour till the game. What an absolute disappointment. And I don't want it to get lost because between Friday and now, there have been so many games played. I don't want it to be forgotten. What Cignetti did, the Indiana coach, on Friday night was one of the most embarrassing things I've ever seen. To go on ESPN on College Game Day and to talk all of that shit about, hey, I beat top 25 teams, I won top 25 games at James Madison, I win big, I beat Nebraska this year, talking like basically, you know, he's a WWE wrestler. And then to go out, I don't care if you're Indiana and you lost the game 100-0, you had a great year. The only thing that could stain the season is what they did on Friday night. To go out and coach like such a absolute coward early in the game, punch from the plus 38 on 4th-and-7. Down 17 late, he punts. There was a 4th-and-4 where he's going to go for it, calls timeout, kicks a field goal. 3rd-and-10 from midfield, he runs it and then he punts. He coached about as scared as you can possibly coach. And then late in the game, his team makes a run, a touchdown, a two, an onside. They made it, and I think they got in the end zone again after the onside. So they came up with a flurry of points where it made the coach look so bad that your team gave up. And that's what he did. I mean, how do you punt down 17 in the, you know, that late in the game? Just an awful, awful, gutless performance from Cignetti on Friday night. And the games, like I said, so excited to watch them. What was the best game of the four? I guess Clemson, Tennessee, because it was a 14-point game and, you know, Clemson had a chance to cover late in that game. And then that game was a 21-point game, middle of the third quarter, late in the third quarter. The games were awful. And culminating with Ohio State, Tennessee, game starts, I think, 8:10 Eastern. I think like 8:25, 8:30. I turned the game off. I started watching something else. And I eventually went back to it. Tennessee, you know, made a mini run, but it was unwatchable. It was absolutely unwatchable. It was so disappointing. And I guess probably should have seen it coming, just because I think I phrased it this way on Friday with Brad Powers: the better teams are better and the better teams are home. So let's not get too wrapped up in these underdogs. So I thought Indiana could have kept the game closer if they didn't miss that tackle, miss the angle early on that 98-yard touchdown. They actually settled down and played decent defensively. The quarterback was not good for Indiana, and that hurt them. But they actually played a decent game defensively. But Tennessee was never in the game. SMU was an embarrassment. Clemson fought back. They were up 7-0 early, too, and then fought back after being down way big. But Texas was in control, you know, for 98% of that game. So the game's just, well, they were a disappointment. And we have a situation. We have a I don't know if you blame the committee. I think you do. Just the landscape of college football. It is so stupid the way this is set up, where Oregon is the best team, undefeated, only team undefeated, Big Ten champ. Here's your reward. You're a 2.5-point underdog to Ohio State. And Georgia and Oregon earned the bye by winning their conference championship games. The team they beat in the conference championship game got the easier path. Penn State and Texas, he'd much rather be them. Penn State gets a layup so to speak, against Boise, where they're a double-digit favorite. And Texas is a two-touchdown favorite against Arizona State. How they sat there in the meeting and said, hey, this is the fair way to see this. Let's see this that way and that way. That's fair to everybody considering everything. That's rewarding Oregon. Oregon gets no home games. Okay, they get the bye, but they get no home games. And then they're an underdog to Ohio State. And you have the two best teams in the country, both in the same conference, playing in the first round. It's just so stupid. It's just so stupid. In college football, ugh. I mean, the games are fun. I love the idea that the games are on campus. I hope they continue to put more games deeper into the tournament on campus. But how you did that and how you thought that was a good idea, I have no idea. Just so stupid. But we will get these games. New Year's Eve, New Year's Day will be the quarterfinals. So we got like a 10-day gap here between games here. So maybe the next round will be better. But look, based on the spreads, we know two of them will probably be not very good based on Texas being a huge favorite and Penn State being a huge favorite. I don't know what you'd see from either dog to make you think those games are going to be competitive. And you're just conditioned to think these big spreads are going to play out where the big favorite's going to pull away, especially, if any home field advantage for these underdogs here. Now, you don't want any home field advantage for the favorites either. They're on neutral, but not sure you're going to see much from these underdogs. Georgia, Notre Dame will be fun. And Oregon, Ohio State's going to be a lot of fun too. It's completely unfair how do they see this, but time to talk to Gil Alexander. That is next. This is Should Have Bet More Podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More Podcast. You can catch him on A Numbers Game, the Beating the Book Megapod, where he is the star of both. It is the great Gil Alexander. Gilly, what's going on, man? How was your Sunday?
You say should have bet more. Should have contraction. I don't feel like on NFL Sundays we should have bet more. We should just probably bet what we're betting and keep it at that. And maybe the other sports we should bet more on. Because this is just, you and I were talking a little bit about this off air. Honestly, is this a skill betting experience, the NFL? It is such plinko. Such plinko.
I agree with you. Explain to the viewers what you're referring to, why you mean that, what latex examples, because I completely agree.
Okay, I'll give, this off the top of my head. What we were saying is compared to other sports, right? College basketball, in-game totals, tennis, baseball with pitchers, even college football. There is something just to the Price is Right game where the metal chip bounces from rung to rung and then speeds up and then just lands in a slot. That's ATS in the NFL. The latest example is I had a New England in-game. And by the way, I did not have a particularly good day pre-flop. But I had a New England in-game that got home. I had a plus 11 and a half second half. I had an in-game plus 5.5 when they were up early in the game. It only gets home because, first of all, they punt with like less than 9 minutes left in the game down 10, right? Just I think you tweeted these exact words. The epidemic of punting / give up / tanking is something that I think we've underestimated this year. Maybe I'm being prisoner of the moment, but I see it a lot. So they do that. I'm like, oh, I'm cooked. I mean, they're not trying to win. Buffalo gives the ball back. And New England then takes, count them, 9 plays inside the 10-yard line to get a touchdown. And they got it from the 9 after having first and goal at the 1 twice. Was it a good bet? Was it a bad bet? I can't tell you.
Yeah, and man, there was an epidemic certainly this weekend, and it started, and we'll get to the college here, but what Cignetti did was an embarrassment on Friday night. Tomlin with a give-up punt down 10 or 14. Last week was 14. This week, I think it was down 10, a similar thing where it's like, man, there's 10 minutes left in the game, 8 minutes, you're down 2 scores, you're quitting. This isn't a punt. This isn't strategy. You're just quitting. You're just like, hey, let's lose by less, which I don't know where the strategy is there. That's just waving the white flag. So, yeah, I totally agree. What I'll start with this. Who do you think gets the 1 seed in the NFC? Philly loses. Detroit looks better. They win. Minnesota pulls a game out of the fire. They have, man, it's starting to feel like, they're winning a lot of these games. I thought they were going to lose, especially when Seattle scored. I thought they were going to lose, but they win again. Both Minnesota and Detroit have tough schedules to end the season, though. Who ultimately gets the 1 here?
I really want to see Detroit, Minnesota playing for it. Like, I would love to see that happen. And truth serum, I probably say Detroit. Sorry about that. But could it be Minnesota? Of course it could be at this point. But I do think Detroit somehow still pulls it out. And I guess Philly, has a shot still, but obviously that loss sets him back today. That the Hurts thing is going to be interesting. Yes. The concussion protocol is concussion protocol, and it's sort of this nebulous thing where we're not really informed. We don't really know, you know, you're either in protocol or you're not, kind of thing. I know there's stages to getting out of it, but I think Detroit, to answer your question.
What was it, any other big takeaways today? Like, what's the what's the big story of today in your mind? Anyone you feel differently about, you know, than you did 24 hours ago, or, you know, even this weekend, this the Thursday game, Saturday games, whatever direction you want to go.
Well, I mean, let me start with an award, which is MVP, and I'm just going to say it again. I mean, Josh Allen, pedestrian performance here. After Lamar Jackson now is at 37 touchdown passes and 4 picks, and one of the top 10 best passer ratings of all time. There is no chance that Josh Allen is minus 900, that's an accurate reflection of what is reality. And we've now had two voters of the 50, Aaron Schatz and Mike Sando, say in different sorts of ways before this weekend, they've got Lamar either even or ahead heading into this weekend. So that's something I think people need to still keep an eye on. I don't think it's done. I do think Rookie of the Year is done. I think Jaden Daniels, if there was any doubt before today, it's over. It's all over, as the great Howard Cosell once said. As far as teams are concerned, I don't know if I feel any differently about anything. Buffalo's entitled to one sort of crappy game, I guess. Yeah. Philadelphia and Washington always play tight games. I mean, I think the Hurts thing is obviously big. If he can't go, that's a different story. But I think Washington is what I thought they were. They're a team that's, you know, they're at a level, right? They're like the Houston Texans. They're at a level. I don't think they can beat the best teams on the biggest stages. So, no, not really. I mean, I think we know the seven teams in the AFC. With apologies to the Bengals, I still think we know the seven teams in the AFC. The Chiefs are the exact same thing. They're 14-1, and I don't fucking know how. Am I allowed to curse on that?
You are.
And yeah, how about you? Is there anything, any team you think differently of?
No, I think the way Minnesota won was impressive, but I still like, man, is that like a great team? I think the race for the one is interesting, but like anyone I feel differently about, feel a little bit better about Detroit, where maybe there's a chance here where they catch their breath and maybe the sky isn't falling, where a week ago or a couple of days ago, it's like, man, they gave up basically like 100 points the last two games. They're missing all sorts of players. The bottom might be falling. The bottom might be dropping out of their team. Maybe that's not the case. Maybe that's premature.
That's a good way of putting it. And with Washington, I just sort of, you know, 10-5, man, it's incredible. They're on the cusp of a playoff berth. This just doesn't happen. Like, good things don't happen this often, this frequently, where it's like, oh my God, like when Jaden Daniels got the ball last round, I'm like, they're going to win this. Like, the confidence of that is just incredible.
I felt the same way. It's funny. I felt the same way.
But they had five turnovers and beat. Yeah. I mean, so on the one hand, they didn't have Hurts. So Philly fans could say, well, we didn't have Jalen Hurts. On the other hand, Washington had five turnovers and still won. So, I mean, that's a good thing.
Rank the quarterbacks, the rookie quarterbacks, in order that you'd want. I'm assuming you want Daniels one. Take it from there. You're starting a team. May.
I'm redrafting.
May, Caleb Williams, Bo Nix. I guess you throw Penix in there now. I mean, I don't know what you base McCarthy off, but just, you know, the four or five deep here.
Jaden's one. I really have to say that I was completely wrong about Bo Nix. Because that dude is two. And I do wonder if it's because of where he ended up, but he is just smart out there. He makes the right plays. I have to say Bo Nix too. There's no way to judge Penix and McCarthy, so I kind of just put them out at this point.
Well, McCarthy being in such a winning environment is probably gonna rub off on him and it's probably gonna do him well, but no, yeah. I'm joking. May's been impressive. I think they're all kind of good. Like it's interesting. I'm lukewarm on Caleb. I don't know that Caleb's any good. It's just,
well, May's three, Caleb's four to finish out the ones.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Caleb's four, not because he doesn't make certain plays, but there's just something about him that's a little more volatile than the other three to me.
Yeah, I think I'd have your same order, but with not a lot of confidence. Like May might like be the best of all these guys. May might be really good. Nix might be around. I don't know. It's interesting. It's an interesting thought exercise.
as a Vikings fan, what are you going to do when this season is all said and done? What do you do now? Because Darnold's been great.
Darnold's been great. What would I do, or what do I think they're going to do?
What, answer them both ways, I guess.
The answer to both is the same. I don't know. I really I
like
don't.
You're like, you mean it this way or you mean it that way? I have no idea either way.
What would I do? I don't know. What are they going to do? I still don't know. On
Please
one hand,
clarify your question. I have different answers.
On one hand, it's very hard to find these guys, and I feel like they found these guys. Like you were saying with Daniels, I felt the same way about Donald. I was like, I kind of feel like, you know, I don't know if they can block for him, but I wouldn't be surprised if he leads him to a touchdown right here. Even I wasn't expecting to win the game. Like I have a weird, and I've had this for a while with him, I have a weird trust in Darnold. Now part of it, he's dealing like Addison and Jefferson are studs. I think Addison gets lost because Jefferson's so good and Hockenson, and it's a really good team. Do you just let that walk out the door? The downside is that, man, the team's really good and the team suffers, and it's Kirk Cousins all over again. We're ranting. I'm giving this guy 3-4 years, $120 million. Can the rest of the team be good enough to support Darnold? I don't know.
Right.
And, you know, McCarthy's a rookie deal. But then complicating the McCarthy part of it, he's got this, like, second knee surgery where who knows, like, when, if he's going to be healthy. Kwesi, their GM, is a finance guy, and he's all about, you know, value and things like that, which all these GMs are. I wonder if he looks at it like, hey, from a business standpoint, from like just dollars allocated standpoint, I'm going to roll with McCarthy, maybe even Jones for a little bit until McCarthy gets healthy. It's a really tough spot. You can make really compelling cases for both sides. What do you think they should do?
I think that they should. It's so hard. It's so hard to know. You'd have to have really strong conviction about McCarthy internally. Yes.
Which you picked him 10th or 12th or whatever he did, so you probably do.
But the object is to win Super Bowls.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they're going to, you know, have this gaudy of a record moving forward. But, you know, you're right about the history, right? Remember, Case Keenum had a, whatever you think of Case Keenum, that last year in Minnesota, he had an amazing year of production. And so they just made the assessment, you know, Kirk Cousins over a three-year arc, that was his initial contract, 3 years, $84 million or something like that. Over a three-year arc, he will outperform Case Keenum. The next year, though, I was pointing out, it's like, you're probably not going to outperform Case Keenum in year one, because that was, it's a hard production to you know, duplicate. So they bookended Cousins with Keenum and Darnold. And I don't know, man, if you want to go to, I mean, can you just assume McCarthy is, that's a long way of saying I have no idea, man.
Yeah.
So you are damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
And you better get it right too, because you're going to look like an idiot if you screw it up you know, why'd you overthink it and pay Darnold? You know, you knew it was a one-year wonder. You drafted McCarthy. Why'd you do that? And then if you let Darnold go and it doesn't work out, it's like, man, you had a known commodity somewhat and you let it out the door at the most important position. You screwed it up. It's really not an easy call.
For going back to your earlier question about, did I learn anything about any of the team today? Of the playoff teams, which is what I assumed you meant, not really. But, you know, like as I was watching these late games, and I'm the guy who sort of held on to, you know, the possibility of the Niners window still being open this year longer than most did before, you know, finally waving the white flag with all the injuries a few weeks ago. There are we sure that it's all the spate of injuries and that it's not also a little dash of, oh, this is something that this fell apart so dramatically?
It's very possible. It's very possible those guys are just, you know, everyone's a year older. McCaffrey's a year older, and Debo's had a lot of hits, and, you know, Trent Williams, and and they've played a lot of games too, and they're tired and they're beat down. I wouldn't be surprised again to go back to the Darnold thing where it's like, I wouldn't be surprised about this. Wouldn't be surprised. You could talk me into anything with them next year. If this time next year they're, 13-4 or something, I wouldn't blink. I wouldn't be shocked. There's a lot of talent. But if they just kind of miss their window and this is what they are going forward, like a 9-ish, 10-ish win team, maybe 11 on a good year, wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world either.
I think the window is closed because this was really the last year of it, really. Because you're gonna have to make a Brock Purdy decision. What do they do with Brock?
You got to pay him. I think you have to pay him.
I think you have to, right? You have to.
Now, how much hardball you want to play with him is interesting. But when it comes to these quarterbacks, it's almost like NBA stars, NBA free agents. There's no conversation. You got a guy who's like even somewhat of a guy. Cade Cunningham makes like 5 years. He's like a 5 year, $230 right. million dollar deal. You have a guy, a kind of a guy. You just kind of give him the most you can give him and you move on. Like Lawrence, there's no argument. You just give him the money, even though I wouldn't give it to him. That's not how this usually goes. I don't know if there's haggling involved in terms of the deal, or you just give him, you know, what the market is for quarterbacks. It's probably what's going to happen.
It's pretty simple league when you just talk about quarterbacks. Like the bad teams don't have very good ones, and the good teams do have all the good ones. Like it's kind of how it is this year. I mean, you could have said that. You could have said like the Chargers last year were a bad team, but they still had a great quarterback, right? If you're into Justin Herbert, I don't know like who's the exception this year. I don't think there is on either side.
It's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, you wouldn't consider San Francisco a bad team because Purdy's on a non-playoff team, but
right.
Yeah, I can't think of anyone. I can't think of anyone. I hadn't thought about it, but I know you're probably right. Who do you think wins the AFC North?
I think Baltimore wins it. Baltimore wins it. I think Baltimore is the best team in the NFL. Like I really do. They're my number one team. Yeah.
Not crazy. Now they have five losses, so a lot of people say, "Man, they got five losses. How can they be the best team?" But they're playing better defensively too.
They're but again, there's the NFL because it's not a best of seven like basketball and baseball. It's 60-minute intervals in January.
Sure.
And Lamar is going to be Lamar in the playoffs until he's not.
And he got a shaky kicker on top of it now. He's been a little better the past couple weeks and made a 50-yarder yesterday and made some, extra points here and there. But, man, for a year, it's crazy to think. But, hey, if they're down two with 40 seconds left and he's got to kick a 48-yarder outdoors or something, 50-50. I don't know that he's making it.
And the Tomlin thing we were talking about earlier, I texted right as he was calling that punt yesterday. I was like, this is why he can't be coach of the year. This has happened two weeks in a row now.
Yep.
Like, and they are, and I know like, okay, I was wrong. They hit the season win total over. All right. I was the most wrong about that I've been about anything. But they really do tend to be magical when it comes to plays when they need them. There's the opportune turnover. And you could say, TJ Watt, great. And absolutely part of it is them. Part of it is though that you just run good. And I don't think they're like Russell Wilson has been great again, but I don't trust it come postseason. And I could be wrong about that again too, right? I could be wrong.
Here's how I'll put it. There were a couple fumbles early in the game. There was a strip sack on Lamar, and then Baltimore fumbled the punt. I was shocked that Pittsburgh didn't fall on either one. That's how conditioned I am to like, it's a fumble. I know it's going to be Pittsburgh's ball. I was just like, that's how you kind of knew it wasn't their day. I was like, man, Pittsburgh didn't recover that fumble. That's kind of where I'm at with them.
Yeah. There's 2 weeks left in the regular season. I'm almost like this kind of was draggy today. Today was a really bad set of matchups. Obviously if there was no such thing as betting, God help us all if we were watching some of these games. Like thank God for Philly Washington. Was there any other great game today besides that?
Minnesota Seattle was good.
Seattle Minnesota
was a good one.
Yeah. But I just, the jockeying for position is great and everything, but I'll be ready for the postseason when it gets here. I shouldn't say that because when it's not football season, I long for it, of course. But I am I'm very anxious to see what a postseason, how the postseason matchups go, because that's where it'll get interesting. Like, could Washington pull off an upset against the right team? Could Kansas City stumble surprisingly to everybody? If Mahomes doesn't have a good game, will Lamar bite it again? I mean, I just think that the playoff thing is great.
We're set up for a great playoffs. Now, the NFL to me is about the regular season. It's about having a bunch of games at once. And, that 3:30 to 4:30 Eastern hour where all the games are switching score. We haven't gotten a lot of that. I feel like this year, less than ever, we've gotten like great finishes just consistently. But yeah, once you get to the playoffs, man, it's just that we are set up here for a good playoffs. Anything in this Monday night game, Green Bay laying like two touchdowns here to the Saints.
I'm all about Green Bay. I'm invested in a Survivor, one of the remaining 46 entries in Survivor now. We're on Green Bay. And by we, I mean, I have no say in it whatsoever. And I think they come out and they Fezzik was saying this in our text. He's like, they tend to start quickly. And there's a lot of that that's by design, if you know what I mean. So I think they roll tomorrow night. I really do.
So and you're then lay the two touchdowns or so. I don't know if I can get there.
Ooh, I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah. So no bet for you. Like I know Fez gave out first half minus seven and a half or so. That maybe's a bet, but
that's where I was getting at. But they're more of a first half team. Yeah.
Any takeaway from the college games other than they completely sucked and they were basically unwatchable? That's another man. That sport just drives me crazy sometimes. The fact that you have I'm sorry for jumping in. The fact that you have like the two best teams playing each other in the quarters and the one seed's underdog, it annoys me to no end.
You beat me to it. This is my biggest single takeaway from it is that the fact that they couldn't have, and I use this word not as it actually means, manipulated, right? But the fact that they couldn't have seeded it in a way, properly, some would say, where Ohio State and Oregon did not have to play each other as a quarterfinal. It is really ridiculous because you do have Arizona State in one, you do have Boise State in another, and it's like, what are we doing here? What is this?
UConn-Purdue in the round of 32 is like the equivalent. I mean, what are we doing? It's just so stupid.
It's stupid, and I also – like if you, and I'm not the first to say this, but if you're Ole Miss or if you're Bama, I really do think you watch this weekend and you're like, you got to be fucking kidding me.
Although I can't feel bad for them when you lose.
I don't feel bad for them.
The loss has got to count. I mean, we can't sit here, watch all year, watch these games and say, I know you lost, but we know you're better. So, you know, wink, wink, you're in. Yeah, like I have no problem with Indiana getting in. People like, look, there's always going to be debates no matter 12, 14, 18. NCAA tournament, we got 68 teams. There's still debate. So I agree. Those teams would beat Indiana, but hey, you lost to Vandy, you lost to Oklahoma. If you're Bama, like, too bad.
I'm with you on that. What do you think went on with SMU's quarterback Jennings? Was the stage just too big?
Maybe. He had that play early where he could have ran for a first down on fourth and one, throws it, and it's incomplete, and it just, man, it snowballed after that with pick sixes. I almost felt bad for him. That was tough to watch.
Because it really is true. Like, people never buy into this thing, but you never know if that play works out.
Yes.
You just never know, right? Maybe the whole game goes differently. I know that's hard to prove based on what we saw, but, I mean, it was just a waterfall of just mayhem in that game for them.
I was so excited for this weekend too. I didn't watch one play in the second half of that game, the SMU game. And I was so annoyed that Ohio State was up 21-0. I think it was like 8:30 Eastern. The game started at 8:10. So 20 minutes. I turned the game off. I went and did something else. I was watching reruns of other shows. I'm just so annoyed. It was such a letdown. Cause I was so pumped to watch all these games. It was just,
because I got conditioned by the first two games, once Texas took like a big halftime lead, I kind of stopped paying attention.
Yeah.
So I know Clemson made it kind of cosmetically.
That was
close.
Probably the best game of the four.
That was the best game of the four. It's crazy. Yeah. It was the best of the four, and it really wasn't much either.
All right, go. Last one. Any baseball takeaways from any of these moves? Anything like, hey, I got my eye on this team to make a bet. And we had talked about this. I don't know if it was on this, a numbers game. Ohtani is 2-1 to win the MVP.
You had a bet. Take your bow, Will.
I thought that's where they'd open it.
Because we had this debate. We had this discussion, and I said he'd be minus 200.
Yeah.
And what does he end up? He ends up 2-1 plus 200.
And that's just one book. That's the only one I saw the odds up are at DraftKings. And maybe there's a different number somewhere, but I did see 2-1 at DraftKings.
How can you not bet that?
I agree.
How can you not bet that? If you are to assume, now you can't assume what he did this past year, but let's just say it's 80% of what he did offensively. And then he's
an all-star pitcher with 35 home
pitcher?
Runs.
Like, I mean, what are we debating at that?
I agree.
I even say, like, people know I think Barry Bonds is the greatest player of all time. And people are like, oh, you think, you know, what do you think about Ohtani? I'm like, I can't even compare it to Ohtani. What Ohtani does is his own category.
Yeah. It's insane. So, Ohtani, 2-1. Any other teams you have your eye on in terms of like, hey, I like the moves, or just there's still a lot of puzzle pieces to fill in. Burns hasn't signed. Sasaki hasn't signed. There's still some guys out there.
I just worry that the Dodgers are so talented that they are just the de facto NL team. And I know how do you feel about Fried going to the Yankees? That's got to be, you got to be pumped by that.
I like their bullpen moves more than anything. The kid Cruz strikes out 15 guys per 9 innings, and Devin Williams, you throw him with Weaver, it's a different team. that's all of a sudden, it's one of those old school Yankee teams where, hey, you're up a run and going into like the sixth or seventh inning, and you can kind of shut the game down. I'm excited about that because they did not have a lot of strikeout guys. I mean, they're putting Tommy Canley on the mound in the eighth inning of a closeout game in the World Series. I like the bullpen. I think they've had a nice pivot here. I don't know what Goldschmidt has left, but I think they have a nice pivot here. They did a nice pivot.
I would agree with you. I think that to me is the most interesting thing. The Yankees pitching top to bottom is an interesting thing, even when you lose Soto. Are you upset now that you know that he got paid as much as he did? Are you upset that they didn't keep Soto? Not that there's a salary cap or anything, but I'm just saying.
Oh, I think it's a devastating loss. He's one of the best players in baseball in his prime, and you're the New York Yankees. I mean, the Mets came in and they stole the Yankees' girlfriend. I think it was very, and I'm friends with a lot of Yankee fans. There's a lot of coping. Oh, I didn't want him anyway. Overpaid. He's a diva for having all of these requests. It's like, hey, he's one of the prize free agents of all time. He got what he got. He took the best offer. The Yankees were fair in the offer. It's just, hey, it's like a baseball game. There's a winner and there's a loser. The Mets won the bidding war. I think it's a devastating blow. They've recovered nicely, and the Mets Mets still need some pitching because Montas and Clay Holmes, they don't have enough pitching. But it's a devastating to lose a player that great. It was so fun to watch him and Judge back to back. It was beautiful baseball. I'll miss him as a Yankee. I really will. It was a pleasure to watch him play.
I forgot I was talking to a Yankees fan for a second because most teams fans, when you guys go, oh yeah, well they paid him $650, so you know we weren't gonna be able to do that anyway. You're like, bah, it's the worst thing that's ever happened to us.
I mean, you think about he hits that home run. It's only a couple months ago still. Saturday night in Cleveland, two outs, two strikes, two men on to send the Yankees to the World Series. And 10 days later, you lost the World Series. And 6 weeks later, he's on a different team. That is a tough one to swallow for the Yanks.
I don't know that we've talked about that properly, but the bookends of that World Series, the game one, the way the game one lost with the Freeman walk-off grand slam. And then the five-run fifth.
Oh. And then the Yankees had a lead after that going into the eighth. That's just – yeah, I mean, it should have been 3-2 going to L.A. It might have been – and maybe it should have been 3-2 Yankees. Yeah, it's one – it's going to take a long time to get over if you're the Yanks.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. They did have a lead again. That's sort of like the 1986 point where people are like, you know, the Red Sox led game 7-3-0 after the whole, you know, Buckner threw his legs thing in game six. It's like, oh, yeah, Red Sox were up 3 runs in game 7.
Or Cardinals-Rangers. Rangers had so many leads in that game 6 and then had an early lead in game 7 where it's like Hamilton and a homer and extras. That was, I still think, the best baseball game I've ever seen. 2011 game 6 of the World Series.
2011 game 6 is the most underrated game in World Series history. No one ever talks about it.
Oh, it's the best. I had Texas, too. I had Texas, I think, that game for the series. Man.
It was awesome.
Yeah. Gilly, appreciate you, man. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Numbers game, 10 to noon Eastern, Monday through Friday on VSiN. And of course, the Beating the Book podcast, the Megapod, which you are a part of each and every Thursday. Did you enjoy doing the video version of that on Thursday?
Yeah, it was fun. I'm glad people enjoyed it. People seemed to enjoy it. So it was fun.
Wishnet full purple. It's awesome.
Yes. Yes. All right, Gilly, appreciate it, man. Thanks.
Thank you, brother.
All right, that will do it. I guess I didn't mention the Monday night game. Talked about it a little bit with Gil. I don't really have a pick. I guess I swallow hard and take the points. Here's the thing. If you're going to take the points with New Orleans, just hope, you know, Green Bay's probably going to score first, score early. Then you jump in on a live number with New Orleans. But not dying to bet that. I would expect Green Bay to win. And with the way these favorites have been winning and covering, I'd probably just pull away and win and cover. But it would be a small bet on New Orleans. If I had to bet the game, I would just, hey, 14's a lot in the NFL. I would take the points, but not sure I'll actually bet it. But like I said, no show on Wednesday. Merry Christmas to everyone. Happy holidays to everyone. We will be back Friday with a show. We will have a lot to discuss. So enjoy the holiday. See you Friday.